thank you all for your continued participation, and a lot of the excellent work that's occurred over this last month has been over and above beyond the call of duty for some of you who are also running elections. So thank you again. I want to open with quick introductions from our task force members so that we can get that on the record. Max, start with you. Come this way.
Sure. Max Halperin.
Vaughn Bodelson.
Kathy Bonifield.
Grace Walker-Rowitz.
Debbie Erickson.
Mark Ritchie.
Beth Fraser.
Carolyn Parnell.
Gary Poser.
David Maeda.
Pat McCormick.
Sally Olson.
Thank you, everybody. I'd like to ask for a motion to adopt the minutes from our last meeting.
I shall move.
Thank you very much.
Second.
Thank you. Any discussions, additions, corrections? We didn't see any from the email, but just checking. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. We will have in our next meetings the official reports from the counties who conducted the pilots and their analysis. They're gathering information now. But we wanted to take some time in this meeting to get task force members' impressions and some of your observations and just kind of get the conversation going, knowing that at our next meeting we'll actually get the official reports. And so I'm just going to open the agenda up, and anybody who would like to give us your impressions and your experiences, please jump in here.
I'll begin. I was lucky enough to observe the training of election judges. I was an election judge myself, so I couldn't go to precincts. And I think it went really well. The judges, I think initially they might have had a couple questions, but it seemed like they were very accepting of the pilot. The one hiccup that we had was the Bluetooth device, that since there were so many people learning at the same time, sometimes they would push print in another printer at another table would print. And I think that if that we had multiple printers in a precinct, we'd have to be aware of that possible problem happening in the future. But it seemed to go well.
Senator Bonoff and I went to two different polling places in Minnetonka, and I was just commenting to David how well-trained the election judges were. There were two different systems, the HART system and the EA system, and the election judges were very, very comfortable with them. I asked if they thought, just based on their experience, they would be time savers going down the road, and they really, truly believed it would be. Because it was a pilot, they were, you know, making people walk through two steps, but they really felt like it would be a time saver going forward. And they did not get pushback from the people who were voting. I mean, they seemed to accept very well that this was a pilot, and it was a kind of a non-issue for them. But I was pretty impressed with how well they had been prepared and with their take on the system. They were very comfortable with it.
Vaughn, thank you for welcoming me to your polling place, and it seemed like you had some very happy election judges.
Very excited when you came. So. First of all, I'd like to thank Ramsey County, Christine and Megan for the wonderful job they did in getting us the equipment and training us, and also providing the people that voted a survey that they could fill out. And we had really good response on the survey. A number of people did fill out the survey. The election judges basically loved our particular implementation was ES&S is what we had. So we had a signature pad and a printer and a proprietary piece of hardware there. So there were a number of cables. That was a little kind of an issue, that there were a number of cables laying around. But as far as the election judges, they actually did love it. And I had six judges, and I had five of them had the opportunity to use the equipment. One judge, who's a little older, decided he didn't want to do that. As far as the public, the only pushback I got was the fact that because it was a pilot, he had to sign his name three times or whatever, and he was a little mad about that. But other than that, everyone seemed to enjoy it. There were no problems with it. There were a couple bugs with the software, but that it worked out. We only had five registrations that day, It worked well with the registrations. A couple of things. It forces the registration judge to make sure that they're in the right precinct. There can't be any mistake anymore. Also, the roster judge on a challenge, if there's a challenge like a felony challenge or something like that, it actually gives the instructions exactly what they have to look for. So they're not going back to the manual to finding out what they have to do. It's right on the screen. So basically, it went real well. As far as saving time, I'm not sure it would save a whole lot of time in line, maybe when people got used to it. But obviously, the savings would be in the fact that you could upload the information right off the right off the book rather than having to data enter it. And we did have a lady from Wisconsin that came, and she spent about 4 hours with us. So there was an interest in from other people.
Wow, I hadn't heard
Shoreview
that.
Shoreview and someone from Maplewood also.
Great.
I was able to visit briefly two precincts in St. Anthony in the late afternoon, one in each county, one using SOE, one using ES&S. The election judges and other personnel were very welcoming and helpful to me. I appreciated that. I would say that the attitude of the election judges and the voters seemed very positive, but that there were a number of things that would intensify my predilection to be cautious about any kind of broad-scale deployment, that we would want to do it in a slow election like this one was. There had been some trouble with getting equipment and training and documentation with much lead time. People had not had much chance with that. The election judge I saw operating the S&S equipment was quite comfortable with it. I think it may have been as much about the individual judge as about the user interface design. The judges I saw on the SOE were definitely much more tentative about that. And again, it may be a mix of user interface design and individuals. I was at one point asked to assist and declined since I was an observer. But I mean, it's kind of an anecdotal sign that even late in the day, comfort level was still not maybe where it ought to be. The cabling that Vaughn mentioned was an issue with the ES&S. The election judges remarked on kind of being caught in this snake pit of cables trapped in there. And, you know, correspondingly with the SOE, there were lots of little details like touchscreen laptops not working so great. But those are the kind of things that will get ironed out. I was more interested in the question of, does it really have the potential in busy, high-traffic precincts to cut waiting times? And I think the answer is going to be, at best, once people get comfortable with it, once they get fluent in its operation, where I was kind of informally comparing how long it took the paper roster judge to check in versus how long it took the computer one. They were about matching tempo. It was no great difference.
Well, I went to all three St. Anthony polling places, but I had a different impression than you did. It was interesting just talking to the judges. They were up about the whole process, and although they had questions and concerns and how to do the actual registration at the time, one of the sites had not done any, so they didn't really have that tested at that point that I was there around noon. But they seemed interested and eager, and for the most part, fairly comfortable. They did have the cables at the EOS, at the ESS site. But I was eager to have their feedback. I kept saying, write down your concerns and your positives and negatives, because we want to know what you think about the vendor and what you think about the whole idea. So it was just fun to go there, and it was fun to see it in action. And it was a pilot. it's a learning experience, and that's what I saw going on.
And did they have three vendors?
Two.
Yeah.
Well, I went with Minute, DPS, CIO, Paul Meekin. We went to three offices in St. Paul, and we had. I thought that the judges seemed very open to working with it. Seemed kind of excited about having this pilot. Some of the people at the one in at one of the offices with the ESS, they were having a little bit more trouble than the other two that we went to, the HART and the No Ink. Both of those seemed to be going more smoothly. But I thought that, in general, everybody seemed willing to be trying it out, and it seemed like it would be something that certainly it was very quiet when we went because we went at the beginning of, about 8 or 8:30, so there weren't a lot of people, but I was wondering how it might be if you went at the end of the day when you have the majority of voters, how that would be. But in general, I thought that it's got a lot of promise, so...
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Apologize for coming in late. I guess I do have a question for Mr. Maeda because I was looking at the Minnetonka precincts, and partly I guess the question is also for your office. I know that we had some discussion around the fact that we were not able to do the pre-programming that we had talked about in the legislation, and yet it seemed as though when I was in those precincts there was some data that was there. So I'm wondering, if we had done the pre-programming, what would have been different, and what was the temporary fixed solution that still made it work in those precincts? Because it did seem to work.
Mr. Chair, Senator Bonhoff, what we did provide, pre-registered voters to all of the pilot precincts. What we did was, though not the way we would ever want to do it in a true situation, it was part of generating the rosters and taking the data, and we gave the vendors like a CSV or an Excel file type of data, which is not how we would want to do that in the future. Like, we didn't program allowing the counties through the system to be able to download this file that they could just give to their vendor. We had to manually basically go into each precinct and create these Excel files, put them out on an FTP site for the vendors to come and pick up. And so we were able, I think from the voters' perspective, there was no difference as to how the pre-registered voters would look at. The difference is how we would, in the future, deliver that information to the vendors, and then we also don't have anything to upload the voting history of the pre-registered voters. So those are the pieces that are missing. But I think from the voters' experience as a pre-registered voter, there would be no difference from what they experienced as part of the pilot.
And for the election judges, it would be the same?
Correct.
And Mr. Chair, and then just a couple of follow-ups on that. So, Mr. Poser, if we had done the software programming, then after the election, all the data would have been uploaded. So in some cases, you would then, you'd really be able to clean your database because then you'd have real time. You'd know, who had moved, who did that. And so it would be a real time recalibration of the data. That would be one benefit.
Mr. Chair and Senator Bonhoff, I think there's two different pieces. The pre-registered voters for just posting their history, there's no change to the record or anything like that. That would be, if it had been programmed, that would be a big time savings for the counties rather than having to wand each barcode for who had voted. That would just happen fairly quickly. For the EDR piece, that is the part that we did program, so anybody making a change to their voter record did make their changes in the e-poll books. And that is part of the pilot where we did program to upload electronically that data to speed the ease for the counties then to be processing those records. So, I mean, real time is a little bit different, but they certainly are going to be able to process those EDRs a lot more quickly than they have through the manual process.
How'd that go?
So that part went really well from our perspective. I think so we programmed our system to allow the counties to upload the files, verify that they had the right number of records within that file, so they had some either viewing on the display or through the reports they could see that they uploaded the correct number of files. And then when those were then submitted, they could go in to a pending queue and just process each record It was already then pre-populated with all of the information that came in. They still had to then do the searching statewide to see that it matched a voter. I think once the files were uploaded properly, I think that was a great, it really went well with everything that was in there. So we installed that version. We had to install a new version of our system, which we did on Tuesday night this week. So the counties really had Wednesday and Thursday to upload files and to practice with these. So I think they've uploaded files from 4 out of the 5 vendors have now been uploaded into the system. Some of them went, I think, uploading very well. I think one vendor, I think the county said they had to change the name of the file, but otherwise it uploaded well and they could process their records. One vendor, I think, shortened the proof that was used. So we had the words in there, you know, if they used the driver's license or if they used a bill with a passport or a bill with whatever. So they had shortened that description in their file, and the county had to put the right description in the file for it to be able to upload. But once they did that, that worked fine. I think one of the vendors, I think, had more multiple issues with the file that the county had to work with trying to fix the file so that it could be uploaded. But in all the cases, once they had the file in the proper order, it really worked well. I think the last I saw, we had close to 190 records that have been uploaded through the process and have been processed. And then there's still, I know one of the vendors at the county is still trying to work with the files to see if they are going to be able to get them into a shape that they can upload them. So I think what I saw in the entire pilot precincts, there were maybe 270 election day registrations, and I'd say it's around 190 that have been actually uploaded and processed so far in the 2 days that's been available to the county.
Two quick follow-ups. Mm-hmm. One is we talked to some voting judges that said people who were registered had voted for a long time, their record didn't show up. Would that be just a natural glitch that would have still been there, or do you think it was the short-term fix that might cause more of that than you would normally have?
Well, Mr. Chairman and Senator Bonhoeff, I don't think that was any part of the loading up. So I think if that one of the things the county's piece should be is that, and I know we really looked at the if they were on the paper roster, they were on the electronic roster.
Yeah.
So you're saying that they weren't even on the paper roster.
Oh, so gotcha. So there was, and most likely, and now that I think about it, I think there were, because of redistricting and people's precinct changes, that was probably what that was.
They might have been in the wrong location rather than it being anything.
I think so.
Okay.
Yep. And then finally, Mr. Maeda, anything you'd like to share about the short-term fix and the difference you saw, and was that workable for you guys?
Well, Senator Bonhoeff, obviously it'd be better to have a permanent fix. I think the short-term fix is a little frustrating for me because there were multiple steps involved with me. It was the county that had to load the data, and then I was also working with a vendor, so I was like a go-between between the state, the county, and coordinating it all, whereas if there's a permanent process in place, I don't think that would be, it'd be a much smoother process overall. But, yeah, other than that.
And were you pleased with how it went?
Well, also, if I can share my thoughts on the entire day. I was extremely happy to hear what Ms. Bonnefeld and Commissioner Parnell said because, quite frankly, going into the day, I was a nervous wreck that we were biting off far too much because we also in Minnetonka were implementing new voting equipment for the first time. So we were doing two different systems, and I really felt like I was putting our election judges in a position to fail because I didn't feel like I had provided enough training to them. It felt like I didn't think they were ready at the beginning of the day to get the poll book up and running and feel comfortable using it because we basically didn't provide more than an hour or two of actual hands-on training. So I was extremely nervous going into the day. And the first issue we came into was, has already been mentioned, it was the cabling. I think people are very uncomfortable, whereas I just kind of, when I buy a new computer, just plug things in and hope they work, and if they don't, I'll move the plugs around. I don't think our election judges feel that comfort, and they really wanted to make sure everything was set up properly. And so there was a lot of questions I had about which port they should plug things in, and they were really worried about setting things up right. And on the other hand, One of the vendors I personally wanted to use was election administrators because they had a cordless solution. Everything was Bluetooth connected. But even there, we had issues with, as Ms. Bonnefeld mentioned, with them hitting a button and it printing to a different printer than they were expecting, or it should have printed to, because there were two printers involved. And we also had one of the issues we discovered in training that became an issue on election day, and it was a quirk. But if we didn't turn on the Bluetooth printers before the tablet, then the connection didn't become established. So we had connection problems. So either way, I think there were issues with too many cables on one system, and the other system we used, there were technology issues. But other than that, once we got everybody up and running, and then the vendors sent people out, and I went out to as many of the precincts as I could get to, and getting people comfortable, I think once our election judges really got used to what we had implemented in the polling place, I think they really were excited, as everyone has mentioned. And I've gone through all the surveys that they sent back to me, and to a T, they all really thought it would help them do their jobs better. I hate to disagree with Mr. Halperin, but from what I saw, the electronic searching of records went extremely, much more quickly than the paper. We were doing simultaneous searching, and everything I saw, the electronic person always found the person first. It was, and actually toward, I hate to get off topic, but middle of the day, we started to use one of the tablets that EA provided in our community center for a precinct finder, because we have three different precincts, and so they were using it electronically to look up the correct polling places. And again, it not only eliminated the chance for them searching the paper precinct and looking something up wrong, I mean, it tells you what precinct they should be, and there's no doubt. And it was much quicker to find, so even as a paper precinct finder, I think it would be beneficial. So for the most part, I think everything went well. I don't have to turn in my letter of resignation for putting my judges in an unfair spot. And I honestly learned more from the pilot project than I've learned through this entire 3 years I've been doing this for 4 years.
So. And so in summary, Mr. Chair, thank you, Mr. Maeda, because, you know, I know the commissioner said it, but I knew those judges personally. They were friends of mine, and they did really love it and just found it so rewarding to be part of something from the ground floor. And when you said that, it sparked what the difference was in the first precinct. They didn't have that system where they could do the precinct finder. They weren't doing that. And so that was the difference. It just somebody didn't show up, whereas in the second one, they had the solution right there, and that really made a difference.
And David, did it make a difference that you've been doing this for a couple times? Were some of the judges overlapping and had some familiarity or...
Mr. Chair, honestly, I thought that would be the case, but I don't think it was. I think it was almost a disadvantage because they had become used to the other product that we're using, which, quite frankly, for the Election Day registration is much more advanced than either one of the products we use this time.
Uh-huh.
So there were features that were missing in both products that they had become accustomed to, and I think they struggled with that, actually.
And that was a data card prior product.
Yes.
Other experiences?
Mr. Chairman, I'll say I did go to five precincts, so I got to one of each of the different vendors. And I think some of the comments, I guess I don't want to repeat some of the same comments that were heard, some of the ones that I haven't heard here. I did hear some of the comments between some of the judges who just didn't like the keypad that was like part of a tablet. I think they would have, some of them expressed that they would have sooner had an actual keyboard rather than trying to type on a piece, but I don't know how much of that is just getting used to it. But I just wanted to say that was one of the comments I did hear. I think the cabling was certainly something that I noticed as well. I think some of them, when they were trying to then sign something on paper, they had a hard time finding a spot on the table because there were cables that were in the way from them even trying to sign a document. And I guess the other part I would say that I think some of them, I guess I would say that some of the ones I thought were very fast check-ins, and I guess part of that is also then thinking in terms of this not being a pilot, that they could have then gone to any line rather than having to go to a specific line and wait. So I think there's some of that benefit would be that they could go to any station versus having to stay in a particular line. And then the other part I guess I will say is that I know one of the election judges that I thought, I think it was in St. Anthony, that said that, you know, she sat down and she was still kind of nervous because she called herself a computer novice and didn't really want to, you know, hadn't used computers much, but is there, and she checked somebody in, and afterwards in talking with her, really said she did a flawless job. I don't think the voter on the other side noticed at all that she was tentative or that she, wasn't that familiar with computers. I think it was easy enough for her to be able to search and to check that person in and let them proceed through the process. So I thought that showed to me that, depending on the particular products, I guess, that it's possible for novices to really use the system well.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It was a great day, really fun to do, and I think the value of so many of us going out there having different experiences, different times of the day. I was out and about from about 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. I visited probably 8 or 9 precincts, and I made sure I got to at least one of the equipments, but most of the time for more than one, because I wanted to see if it made a difference of the same equipment in this precinct and a different one. So in going through all of that, but just on an overall, just that it was a very positive. And what I thought was interesting was the enthusiasm, and matter of fact, the election judges seemed to be kind of energized by the whole thing. This is just kind of the best word that I could describe it. One of the things that they said to me was, the double work. But after a while, as I was going throughout the day, I noticed that, just like yours, on the spot, they were working together to improve from the morning to using them in the 3-precinct location as a screening tool to get them in the right precinct, save time, 2 election judges sitting together. Every precinct location has a different setup, so you can't be absolute about what works somewhere works everywhere. But they were able to have the freedom to be able to work out what worked for them. And they just said, though, that if they wouldn't have had the double of the paper process and the electronic and would have just had the electronic, then it could have really, really seen more benefits. So they were obviously in their mind down the road to do that. I thought what was interesting in the equipment, the extra cabling of ESNS, and we understand that cable or no cable, technology is still technology. But I think that if you eventually have systems and you do that, then they will work that all out. That will come. One of the things that I really liked was on 2 of the 5 pieces of equipment, everybody had a little different way. And that was, one had a single, I call it a sticky thing that they would peel off and apply. One was kind of a square-like place, and then the voter would sign. And it really complied, I thought, really well. The other one was where you had the curly slips and keeping track of them, making them lay flat. My concern was, losing them, tying it all together versus the ones that were stuck on. One system had a double one, which I thought was really effective, of having 2 that they did. And that was a little different. It was almost looked like the paper roster because it was a more narrow peel-off, more of a narrow one, versus the square-like one. I can square, narrow, whatever. But it was the other thing is that the judges said that at the end of the night, when you have them stuck onto the piece of paper, that tie-in, she said it'd be real easy to say, okay, 10, 20, 30, 40, to count and reconcile. And then it also tied back better with the election judges at the front table to the back table. So that auditing process, I think, would be really, really helpful after the poll closed. But I was not there at the end of night to try and get around to that. I thought, from what I saw, the cities and the townships and everybody was doing such a good job collecting information from the election judges and being observant that I felt we could really rely upon that. One of the things is that when you mentioned a data card, one of the things that we haven't done yet and is when we had put through some legislation before, we had asked the Secretary of State Office for the cost of developing an in-house system versus a vendor. And the main thing is, again, you can get some of those custom features and some of those other things. And it was quite, at the time, I think we had put in $1 million for the Secretary of State office. I think you gave us a price tag of $875,000, and we just added some to it to bring it up to $1 million. That would build an in-house system, and especially with our state voter registration system, you kind of eliminate some of those technical touch points when you do it in-house. It's a closed system versus some of the issues of connecting up with that. So I think it's something that we have not yet considered, but we have a very successful past. I think the state voter registration system has the capacity, obviously, from the previous funding requests and some of that information that, you know, my one concern is some of the features that I've seen before that we didn't have or did have. By the time you have to pay any other company to customize their product for your state, you're almost in this return on investment cost benefit analysis that in-house, and then you don't have the long-term maintenance, licensing, and other issues that come with it. And this is one of those areas because of the local city, county, township, Secretary of State office and the sensitivity to privacy of data. It isn't something we've maybe looked at yet. The purpose of this pilot was to see how our election judges and other things worked. The actual technology, obviously, we all saw some things or some issues there. So those are my comments, but I thought that overall it was as I had hoped. In regards to the most important thing for me was the election judges, that we can lift their burdens, make things a little bit easier. And that was really interesting to see the dynamic of the older election judges with the middle age and with the younger, and how they, when this technology came here, how they worked together using their election knowledge and other stuff and the knowledge of all that. And it almost, the ages almost disappeared. They just kind of, it was a very interesting dynamic to see in life. That was a very, very good experience to see that.
Any other reports? Please.
I just have a follow-up question on Senator Kiffmeyer's comment about the reconciliation. Mr. Maeda, was it helpful to have that system in place to help reconcile the signatures to the voted ballots?
Systems did you have? We used HART and election administrators, and honestly, the reconciliation, we had a 17% turnout. So actually, for the seven precincts that came back, there were no reconciliation issues whatsoever, so I don't know if that was a fair test or not.
Yeah, I would like to do follow-up on that. Were either of your two pieces of equipment have any of those sticky things, for lack of a more elegant word?
The HART system used labels.
That was
the one that had the little square ones that put in a roster. They signed on the roster.
Process-wise, I know quantity makes a difference, so process, could you, you know, that, what they had said to me about the simplicity of counting the pages like that?
I know, Senator Kiffmeyer, from the surveys I got back from the other vendor, the election administrators, we got a lot of comments about concerns about the receipt tape and how difficult it would be to actually count those. So I think, yes, having everything more orderly on pages makes a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm. Just from a...
Yep.
I want to acknowledge how much work this was for local officials and for Gary and you and your staff. I mean, this took a lot in the midst of a whole lot of other things, and I feel like we've gotten some very valuable information just from these comments, but I'm really looking forward to hearing from the counties, you know, ultimately.
If I may, I just have one more comment about the observation I had of the training, but also the precinct that I work at, often we have about 1,000 people register on election day. And knowing that what I observed was there's the election day registration form that printed out, and the idea of how long it would take to register them using that system would be concerning unless we had a printer for every single election judge registering people. And I think we have more than four election judges registering people in my precinct. So it could, I just want to say that there could be systems that we have to discuss with precincts that have high EDR rates.
Mm-hmm. Follow up on that. Mm-hmm. What piece of equipment was that? Which kind?
I observed the HART training. I didn't go to a precinct on election day. And what it was is just the registration was simple, but they had to print out the registration form, and that took a while to print. That was the slowest part of the process.
In visiting all those different precincts, there were some that were very fast in the printing. And this one that I experienced in the polling place was it was like the dot matrix. I mean, it was excruciatingly slow. I cannot imagine that would ever, we will not, no, no.
I will quote you on that.
Yes. I appreciate that.
Yes.
Mr. Chair, if I may, so a question to that, Kathy. Were those printers part of the system as it was, or is that just printers that were on stock that they had to put in the precinct on election day? Maybe that's for Mr. Maeda.
This was an election administration system, actually, and it was a Bluetooth printer that I actually ended up purchasing for this pilot. And the issue really was, this was the only printer we could find that stayed connected to the tablet that didn't go asleep. Mm-hmm. But it was an extremely slow printer, and we would never use that printer. I mean, I think I could handwrite a form faster.
Duly noted, this was a pilot project.
But that was a good question, Debbie, to clarify.
Yeah. Any other questions? Thank you, everybody, and thank you for that extra work. And yes.
Chair, since we have Commissioner Parnell here, and I'm not sure what, Commissioner, back to my question of the in-house component of SVRS, could you maybe address that a little bit? Because I know there's been some changes.
Mr. Chair, Senator Kiffmeyer, in the IT world, we generally advise doing a pretty rigorous build or buy analysis when you've decided to do an IT project. And there are methodologies around that, so I agree with that thought, and I think that a build-buy analysis would be very appropriate in a case like this. One of the challenges, I'll be honest about, in the build yourself is the challenge of finding the skill set in an environment that is very competitive for IT developers and the challenge that we have in recruiting some of them. So, but no, I would be all for taking a look at that.
Is that something, Mr. Chairman, that Commissioner Parnell, I know with the centralizing of some of the IT things, is this something that, does this require legislation? Is this a component of legislation? Is this part of your process that you do?
Mr. Chair, the Secretary of State's office is not part of IT consolidation. We work very well together, and we would certainly be happy to lend a hand, but that's the way things stand at this point. And I would assume that the Secretary of State would own this project. But.
Well, and I think in general there's a whole big conversation. I know Barb Welty couldn't be here today from the townships, but the townships have a kind of a view about don't give us more, that kind of thing. So I think as we develop the idea of where can the greatest benefit be harvested, then we can get a picture of what that might look like. And then based on that, we saw some systems. We didn't necessarily look at data cards this time, but, I mean, we know some of that. And we saw the system from Iowa, which they developed in-house, which now is available. So it seems like there's a lot of options. And for us, we always think that going to Minit as our first, that's kind of our first stop on a lot of things. We, of course, have built a lot of the big stuff in-house, and that's been a good thing. But particularly on our security and other things that we rely on Minit, that's a kind of our first place. So I think we're moving in a larger direction where some other decisions, and then once those decisions, then the question of what kind of system and then where might that come from. I was impressed to hear so many people comment on some systems really not being appropriate and then some systems seeming really successful. So I feel like the reports we get next meeting from our counties might even lift up that a little bit a little bit higher. I mean, I think in when we heard our presentations, they didn't all exactly sound the same, but, you know, it was a good sales presentation by all of them. But I think in the pilot, we saw that there were some that are clearly superior and some that were clearly not what we need. And hopefully that'll come out more in the next next discussion. Other comments or questions? Speaking of big in-house projects, Pat McCormick, it's your opportunity to give us your view and perceptions on one of the assignments from the creation of this task force, data security questions and the use of your internal photographs. And I understand you brought staff and others. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and members of the task force. For the record, Pat McCormick, the Director of Driver and Vehicle Services, and I'll let the other members of DPS introduce themselves.
I'm Paul Meekin. I'm the CIO for Minute Services at the Department of Public Safety.
Joe Newton, General Counsel for the Department of Public Safety.
And so I think the what you were requesting is information regarding security of driver license data, as well as then talking about the use of DVS photographs. So I think we'll start with Paul Meekin just talking a little bit about the security, and then we'll go to the use of the photographs.
Okay. Thank you, Pat. Mr. Chair, I'll just talk a little bit about what we do at DVS as far as securing DVS data, what Minute Services does to make sure that our data is secure. When we think about data security at DVS, the images or the photographs are really just another piece of the data that we protect equally amongst all of it. So in talking about the types of things we do for security, really applies to everything. It's not, we don't think of the photos as being something separate with respect to that. As you had mentioned, we're in the process of building a replacement system for DVS called the Minlars Project, and there's a considerable amount of effort being done on that project with respect to security. I can attest that we have a number of staff working on it, and security in its own right is an enormous, information security within security is an enormous discipline that encompasses many, many things. So sometimes we just talk about security fairly simplistically, but it has many, many components and disciplines within it. So we talk about making sure that we have the correct authorized access, the correct authorized use of data, making sure that data isn't disclosed inappropriately. We include things like disruption of the data and the integrity of the data, making sure the data hasn't been modified so that we know the data is has that is the data we believe it is. Of course, we also include perusal and inspection of the data, making sure that people don't have access to it without the appropriate controls. And we include also the destruction of the data, actually, as well as the copying or the recording of the data. So I want to talk about sort of two areas that we could go on and on, frankly, with respect to what security is and what information security is. But I want to talk about two things that I think are most important to us here. One is security within the DVS system, and then also what that means also when we share that data with what I'm just going to call partners. So the first thing is the security within the system that we have. At the very basic level, you know, we store this data, the photos and all the data, in a database, and of course we have physical security around that. So, for example, the Minlar system will be hosted in the state's new Tier 3 data center, which offers the highest level of protection that the state has for data. When we look at the data and we go through, for example, with this build of the Minlar system and what we have currently with the legacy systems, we think in terms a lot about the confidentiality of the data, which is making sure that the people who access the system have the rights to do that, and we know the identity of that person, and then also that that person has the authority to do certain things with that data. And we invest a lot in that. Where the state has an initiative around what's called identity access, which MnLARS is participating in, as well as MnSure. And it's quite a complicated area, actually, to think about that. So I want to make sure that we don't minimize just what it takes to understand the identity of the people who are accessing the data, that they can access the data securely, and then also that they are authorized to access certain data and do certain things to it. Moving on then, and looking at other areas around the authenticity and the integrity of the data, clearly we want to make sure that the data that people are reading or querying or creating or modifying is all correct, is all accurate, and that the integrity is there for that. And so there are many, many security controls. We literally have thousands of security controls in place for the MnLARS system and for our legacy DVS systems. And then the last thing that I want to just talk about just generally, because I think it's important too, is just the availability and what it means to have that data to be available for people. So clearly with the DVS data systems, we have a number of driver's license agents. We have exam stations. We have employees throughout the state. We have deputy registrars. And making sure that that data is available to them throughout the state, and that in being available to them, it is also secure in that, is also another very large enterprise to make sure that's there. And we are constantly investing in our networking and in our applications and everything down to the devices, the computers and such that they use to access that data. So when we talk about security, it's important to think about it as these multiple layers that go through. And every aspect of it is something that we consider every day in working on these systems, and particularly with respect to DVS, just exactly what we invest in this is a tremendous amount of time and effort and thought. I want to move a little bit on to auditing with our system, which is another important component of security, which is to know exactly who is logged into the system and exactly what they've done in our system. And this is another very involved area. We keep track of pretty much every keystroke that happens with the DVS data on our network of all the people who access it. So we know if someone has queried a record. We know if someone has inserted or updated a record. And this is, of course, a very big deal so that we can know, for example, if people are using the data appropriately. Now, having all that audit information, all those logs that we have, and then understanding that is very difficult, actually. Sometimes it's easy to say, oh, there's a person, or there's an activity, or there's an event that we can say, oh, most certainly, you know, if there's a famous person and all of a sudden there's a lot of people looking that person up, we can see that there's something going on there. Sometimes we can see activity of a specific individual who is sort of over the top or off hours and that type of thing. But in between those clear-cut scenarios and appropriate use of data are thousands and thousands and thousands of scenarios which just aren't clear-cut to know if the data is being used appropriately or not. And at the Department of Public Safety and at Minute, we are investing a lot now in understanding the use of the data by just looking at those logs. So there's the capturing of the information, and then there's the understanding of that information as to what it means for securing that. So I want to move on a little bit now to what it means when we share our data with people. I've really been talking about our closed environment where we know that all these users are in our system. We understand their identity. And then we have the situation where we share our data in bulk with many, many partners. I think that with the MnLARS project, we're close to 100 such what we call interfaces or exchanges of information with other partners that really are across the board, different agencies, cities, counties, you name it, federal government. And so what does that mean to us? Well, from a technical side, the first thing that happens is that we understand from the business that it is okay to share that data. And I think that Director McCormick and our counselor here, Joe Newton, are going to talk a little bit about what that means. But by the time it gets to me, I know that it's okay to share this data and that the fields or the information that we share is understood. Or we go through a process to make sure that we are giving only the information which is required for that partner. And that can actually be quite involved in its own right. To really understand, to boil it down, we don't want to give excessive or additional information that we don't think should be out there, or that by law or by data use agreement shouldn't be there. So once we have that understood, and we also understand the frequency with which we give the data, because our data is constantly changing. Some people would like their data on a daily basis, weekly, monthly. Some people would like those changes almost real time. Once we understand that and we understand the information that we want to give, we then set up a very secure communication with that partner to make sure that our information is transmitted to them in a secure fashion. So it goes from all those security controls that I talk about that we have at public safety and at Minute. That's leaving that safe and secure environment. We're transmitting it in a safe and secure fashion. And then the partner receives that data. And at that point, it really is out of our control. And they are really bound by the agreements that are in place. And I would suggest at this point that everything I talked about with respect to how that information is secure, all those different disciplines, all those security controls that I talked about, apply to that partner, and that they would now have to implement those and do those to protect it in whatever environment they're taking it to. So I think just in closing here, I just want to talk about the fact that when we look at information security, it is not a one-and-done type deal. It really is a practice or a discipline, and it involves a tremendous amount of effort all the way down. We have a CISO, Chris Busey, in the state of Minnesota, all the way down to the security professionals that are in our organization, and the training of the IT people, as well as the training of the business people and the training of all our partners. And that the amount we invest in that, the human side of that, and also the system side of that is tremendous. So I think I'll just leave it at that for right now. And
thank you very much.
Okay, thanks very much, Paul. I think, as Paul mentioned, we have very specific uses that are allowed under state and federal law of driver license and motor vehicle data. And so we have specific user agreements with various agencies, and that involves either a statutory or rule requirement that agency have the data, or else it must fall within the parameters of the federal law, which allows for certain permissible uses of data, motor vehicle and driver license data, specifically on the driver license side is how it's phrased in the federal regulations. And so those requests come in for that access. They're reviewed. We ensure that we do have the authority before we allow that access. And they, each user has to sign a user agreement with DVS, DPS, and we monitor on a monthly basis the top 50 users of our data so that if it appears that there's more use than we might consider to be within the guidelines, depending what that authority has been granted for, then an investigation would occur. We require online training for all of our staff on data privacy as well as all of our driver license agents and all of our deputy registrars. We also have training that's offered that we had put together and that law enforcement has been required to use as well, to ensure that all of the people that are using this data have an understanding as to how the data is used. Specifically, in talking about the use of driver license photos, the law is very specific in terms of what the driver license photo can be used for, and so that if you would require access for photos, you would that would have to be done statutorily in Minnesota law in order for us to expand the use of driver license photos. 171.01 talks about the photograph and what the uses of in Minnesota statutes, and so there would have to be additional statutory authority granted for the use of photos other than what's listed in current state law. So we'd be glad to answer any other specific questions any of the task force members have.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. McCormick. Appreciate your information, and Paul, you as well. One of my questions is on the, do you store this? I got to be careful. I don't want to. My concern is file size, because I know, especially when we all do these things, photos and everything else like that, the file size really matters. So one of the practical parts of transmission of data sometimes, since the photographs was a question, that's an issue that I think to be addressed. So I know there are ways to compress, to zip, to do a variety of things to relieve some pressure on that, but still it's just a sheer quantity thing. Could you just address that subject?
Yeah, they do take up quite a bit of space. IT in general is we're always involved with larger and larger amounts of data that we're getting better and better at transmitting. So it's a concern, but it's not an overwhelming concern as far as moving that amount of data around. The size of those pictures, I think, can be managed.
Thanks.
I'm wondering whether your concerns would vary depending whether we were looking at a scenario where polling places had data on those who were registered at that precinct versus data on people who might come and register on election day versus, you know, full statewide data in case someone were registering in an unanticipated location. Does the scope of the information modulate your concerns?
If I understand your question, I think that I'm just going to venture here what I think the question is, which is, what would that mean, adding that new data to the DVS data? Is that what you're asking at that point? Or?
No, excuse me, sir. I was inquiring about a potential hypothetical scenario where the partners were increased to include local election administration so that hypothetically DVS data might be present in polling places as a reference for checking election day registrants.
And so then what would that mean for securing that data?
Yes,
yeah.
Sir.
Well, that's clearly a big and complicated question. We understand very well our exam stations, our deputy registrars, our driver's license agents, working with them to secure that data. Those are, at this point, well understood and controlled environments. And it would be really difficult for me to really venture in and say, oh, this is what it would look like to put the necessary security controls in place for a polling station. Clearly, that's a complicated environment from a security standpoint, and I think it would take a lot of consideration and a lot of discussion to do that. It's just a very, very different environment than we're accustomed to with our driver license agents and deputy registrars and exam stations. So I don't have a real succinct answer for you on that other than to say there would have to be a lot of analysis and planning around the necessary security controls for that type of environment.
Senator Bonoff.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, the last time we met and we heard about the difficulty of using, you know, pictures for a variety of reasons as a match, you know, left me wondering even, you know, what is the purpose of of exploring this because it seemed like it was such a reach. And so it's hard even to know what to ask because just the human error and the fatigue and all the things that came up in the last discussions make this seem like it's a leap that we can't make. With regard to the security issues, I have experience with using the legislative process to do that, because I actually carried a bill that said we could use driver's license photos for no contact orders with regard to judges and verifying those for the victims. And I remember there's a strong connection between the CrimNet system and the driver's license system. So I know we've got these various partners and ways that we do share the data that's working. Are there any discussions around additional measures of identification? Are there any internal discussions around thumbprints or facial recognition? Are we right now in Minnesota just strictly in the conversations around photos as the means of identification?
Mr. Chair and Senator Bonhoff, we talked at the last meeting about the facial recognition program that we have, and we are intending to continue that with new technology within the next 2 years, and hoping to get the software on the cameras so that it would be able to be utilized more efficiently, and we would be able to manage the program with staffing that are just assigned to work on that. So that is something that we are planning on doing. It's not available at the current time, and it's still an additional project that requires staffing and requires time to be able to implement it. But certainly we are working on that.
I have a question as far as security to your partners. First off, I am a past deputy registrar / DL agent, so I'm very aware of the security protocols for those two particular entities, and I can affirm that the security protocols are very stringent for those jurisdictions. Even down to the level of the security agreements, user IDs per individual that has access to it, and even time limits to when those individuals can actually access this data. But I'm not real clear on how you, what information or protocols you have for jurisdictions of your other partners, particularly non-governmental. I'm assuming that you do have access for like insurance companies and I do believe gas stations, too, for drive-offs, et cetera. So in those type of scenarios, what kind of protocols do you put in place as far as who does a security agreement? You said it once it's out of your hands, it's up to that jurisdiction to follow up on the security. What kind of requirements do you have, and how do you control people having that data, if that makes sense?
Mr. Chair, we have user agreements with any individual or with any entity that would be using our data, and that in those agreements we allow for the fact that there's specific permissible uses that are identified, and that's what the data that they access must be used for. They cannot use it for any other purpose, and if they would, that would allow us to be able to eliminate their access to that data. As we said, we do random audits as well as the top 50 users, but we require in those user agreements that we can audit it as many times as we need to, and so they're put on notice that, yes, we can be auditing their use of the data. And so that is, we have a unit that works within our support services program area that works on data practices agreements. And we also, Joe Newton, our legal counsel for the department, also advises in that respect so that we're complying with the laws and we're making sure that we're we're utilizing access appropriately for these particular business partners.
So we have about 30,000 in a big year, election judges, poll workers. About how many people are driver's license or deputy, having access from that sort of internal use?
We have approximately 25,000 individual users. About half of those are law enforcement. The other half are DL agents, business partners, private entities.
Other questions? I think we've had some sobering presentations and have an appreciation of the difficulty of the task in front of you and the task behind you and the task around you. But I want to make sure that we are continuing this discussion and dialogue because, of course, for our office, we are tied very closely to DVS and every night and other times as well. So it's a really important relationship. And as the build goes forward, we're also all thinking about, like, how does the future look? And so part of our work here in the task force is looking into the future, not necessarily being able to say exact, but saying, hey, well, this might be important. And I know that's what you're trying to do in that build, and it's a big project. And it's just going to be more security trouble going forward, not less. And we're all, I think, take that quite seriously. So please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, I've given this a great deal of thought because this whole issue, I think the technical piece of the file size is one, and that was one of the things we were looking at. Is it technically even possible? The next question is it worthwhile? I mean, does having the photo and addressing what Senator Bonhoff talked about, the facial recognition, is the human side of it, the after you've seen 100 people go by, just the human ability to look up and down and do some of those things. The issue of facial recognition being technically a support is another whole thing. If you haven't even done it within DVS, I don't think that then that's ready for prime time in regards to anything else. That certainly is something that maybe sometime in the future. And then I think we have the other human questions of the voters saying, I don't want to be doing thumbprints where I feel like I'm almost in a situation like that. And so I think there are ways, though, that within our own state voter registration system that we might think to ourselves, what are some ways that some pieces of what is doable within our system, especially on the file size? I think that is a helpful just piece for what I think of. So maybe in our future meetings, there may be some ways that this could be helpful. But sometimes it's just helpful to know what doesn't. Even, like you said, the pieces of equipment that as electronic rosters that don't seem to work real well, it's helpful just to know that as you work your way down into what does work. So I think it was very helpful, and I appreciate your taking the time to come.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. And I just wanted to carry forward with Senator Kiffmeyer. So you're looking at what our own registration system could use for the photos. I didn't understand where you might be carrying that.
As Representative Lane, I think it was more a matter of I remember some previous conversations of other ways. I just don't remember them right now. I'd have to go back and take a look. There were some presentations, a variety of things. I just don't remember exactly what they were right now, or I'd be glad to be more specific about it. I just remember from some of those presentations that there was another component of this as well, which had I don't want to go any further because I have to go back and take a look at my notes and what that was.
Okay.
So in our conversation about electronic poll books, or got all those new names now, rosters, we've had a lot of presentation of information and materials, and we've had some experience out in the field, which has been, I think, really valuable. And we're at the point in the process where we're needing to be precise about if there is other information or other presentations that we want before we move into our conversation that will then lead into the beginning of a drafting, which will then come back to us. And of course, we're moving into first round of holiday and second round of holidays and all of that, so we're trying to be cautious about the time. And our next meeting, we will open with getting reports from the county. So that, you know, that'll be a supplement, a strong one, to our own observation. So I wanted to, in our discussion phase here, hear from you what you're thinking about where we are in the process. Have you gotten enough information? Are you ready to move into conversation about what should be in that draft? Is there a specific topic or a general topic that we want more information, and so we can get that scheduled in? It's just a chance now to take a deep breath and say, whoa, we've heard a lot. What else do we need to hear, or have we heard enough that we can begin moving forward? So that's where we are in the process.
Mr. Chair, one topic I would definitely appreciate information on is getting some scope on some of the problems that we might be trying to solve with this technology. And so, for example, if getting lines moving faster at busy polling places is a problem that the technology would be used to address, I know, for example, Minneapolis last year did some study of which of their polling places were problems and where the bottlenecks lay, whether it was check-in, whether it was election day registration, and so forth. That kind of information, as well as perhaps some actual data on how quickly people can be processed through different systems, I think would be very relevant.
Great.
Another area that I'm interested in is the experience of other states in providing specific guidelines for systems and certification processes for ensuring that systems meet those. I know I recently communicated to you Indiana had just within the last couple weeks put into place a certification program that the Ball State University voting technology folks are administering. And I think if this task force were to hear either that or other states' experience, that could be useful.
It was like 100 pages long. It was a lot to that. So thank you.
Mr. Chair?
Yeah.
As long as we're talking about other states a little bit, I think one thing I would be interested in is some data from states who have used electronic rosters and costs that were associated with them as far as implementation across multiple jurisdictions, whether it be a large city or whether it be a smaller township. I know Ms. Welty has commented before the townships have some concerns from the Township Association, and I think a cost-benefit analysis to start some of that discussion is helpful from the locals' perspective. And I think we are getting closer to the point where I would like to see us start having some discussions about what recommendations we are going to make. I think there's a little bit more data we could get, but it's time to move forward as well. I'd like to have enough time to discuss some of those issues.
Yeah.
Just a comment. As I was making plans for a trip, I was realizing that I was going to be knocking up against some of the January meetings, and so I was looking at the itinerary of what we had to do here and come up with the same thing you just mentioned now, that have we hit pretty close to the end and need to discuss what we actually need to do next. So because I don't know if we need as many meetings as we have scheduled so far. I looked at the legislation that established this task force that we put together, and so we will do the pilot study. We did that, and we'll get the report back tomorrow, and maybe some of the discussion around cost could come locally anyway, what they anticipate. And we do the research on photographs, and we really hit some walls there, both for reliability and security. And then it's the whether we can do a secure network. We didn't have that ability because we didn't do any software for uploading and downloading, so we talked about that a little bit, and that would require some more legislation, I think, and cost. And then the other thing was just the direct and indirect costs associated with losing electronic rosters. So I don't know how much other states would help us in that, but some discussion on that. And then I'm looking at and saying, what else? So I'm just wondering if we are coming close to having the reports next time and maybe another time to discuss further a report, and would we be close to done, and would I not have to miss any?
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
On that point, I too, I have the legislation before me, and I think while it is interesting and we all like to be a part of the overall pilot project, the legislation is more narrow because it really is leaves in your jurisdiction the broader report about the pilot, but with the report for this group is more defined, as Representative Lane just went through those parameters. So I had come to the same conclusion.
I've been hearing this from email and from conversations, and it feels like we wanted to make sure that we were locking in time, because it was a big task laid out, but everyone has devoted a lot of time, and time up and above and beyond, and it feels like we're in a position to go into our next meeting getting a very useful report from the counties, and then to start with the couple, three things that have been identified here where we could get some information in, and then move directly into that discussion of what kind of things we want in that draft final report, information, recommendations, and maybe we'll come back with a slightly revised January schedule. Representative Lane, if you tell us when you maybe might want to be gone, but come back with a slightly lighter schedule and try to get feedback quickly and kind of make sure we're on time. You know, we want to keep on it and make sure we do what we're supposed to do, but not drive everybody crazy.
Going back to some conversations that we could have in the future, I don't know if this is part of the scope of this, but finding out what other states did to train election judges so there can be a consistent training throughout the state, or at least a conversation. Again, I don't know if that's within the scope, but we could really do a lot of conversations or discussions about the electronic poll book and what we need, but we have to have, I think, the users that are going to be implementing it. Like, how are we going to train them consistently?
Yes, I think we can find out about the cost part. I mean, yeah. Ask other states what were the cost components of that. Yes.
I also concur with the conversations that we had. I think we really need to focus on the scope as what is going to be helpful for our state, for our election process, and what phases, whether it's the registration / roster piece, or is it with election day registrations, and not only evaluate whether those are good pieces, but how to roll it out and what kind of level that we need to roll it out is. Should we pick one first and then the next one and phase it in several years, or how would we like to see this program rolled out in the future?
Seems like some of this discussion is about things that we all need to ponder a little bit based on the information we've received, and if there's some other information we need to be able to bring that in, but thank you.
Mr. Chair, I'll just go back to on the information gathering question I posed to Mr. Poser when he testified on what our rate of wrong precinct election day registrations was. I think some of the errors that could potentially be headed off by our use of a system, we ought to have some concept how frequently those arise.
I can also assist Mr. Poser on that, because the county, Hennepin County, had done an audit. So I do have some specific data as far as the success in the city of Minneapolis for 2012.
Thank you.
And with the redistricting, it was a challenge.
And I think one thing we've recognized is that really polling places are run by the cities, and the counties are there to help, and the voter registration is a county. I mean, these elements are really at the most local level, and so the more we push down and try to figure that out. Other comments? Other questions? Other items for the good of the whole? I believe we're able to adjourn, and we will gather again December 9th at 10. We will be taking all of these and structuring that meeting in a way to make sure that we get started on that final part of the process at that meeting, and we'll come back with a suggestion for January. Thank you again, everybody, and thanks for those great reports, everybody. Secretary Kippenbauer, thank you for going to so many places. You really made it happen there. Thanks.